Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, a Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. On April 18th and April 19th, Fidelity Investments Canada hosted Focus 2024, a two-day event for advisors featuring insights from Fidelity's portfolio managers and subject matter experts. For today's podcast, we're bringing you a discussion from this event featuring portfolio manager and CIO Andrew Marchese and portfolio manager Ritu Kumra, who both sat down with host Glenn Davidson. Andrew manages several Canadian equity funds, including the Canadian Discipline Equity Fund. Ritu is director of research, manages several crypto products, and also heads up the Canadian Long Short Alternative Fund, which launched earlier this year. Today, we'll hear how the fund is managed, how it complements other Fidelity alternative funds, and how it harnesses the power and depth of our research team. Ritu notes the fund essentially goes long on buy-rated names and goes short on sell-rated stocks. Andrew adds our research analysts are very good at picking out stocks that we don't want to own, but he says in most situations, those stocks could eventually hold much opportunity. Today's podcast was recorded on April 19th, 2024.
Well, this is a good session to be a continuation from Dave Way's discussion yesterday from a long-short perspective. And we can get into more detail, too, because, Andrew, you're here to talk about the creation of these solutions from a Canadian perspective. So this is good. And I was thinking what we should do is maybe start with an overview of your roles, just to expand on what Alex talked about. Andrew, maybe I'll start with you because you oversee the entire Canadian operation from an investment management standpoint. Just give us an idea of what your jurisdiction is.
Yeah, so we have 14 portfolio managers in equities working out of our Toronto and Montreal offices who report directly into me. So I have oversight responsibility for their mandates. I'm also the CIO for Fidelity Investments Canada as a whole. So any of the products that are distributed by Fidelity Canada would fall under, technically under my jurisdiction as well. We have a small high yield team, which kind of is dotted line reporting into me. And then, so it's just basically making sure our portfolios are doing what they should be doing on a day in, day out basis, looking at them from a risk return profile and making sure that what our clients believe they are purchasing, they're indeed getting. In other words, the portfolios, the funds are wired to do what they're designed to do.
And Andrew, when you started, I believe it was around 97 or 99 or so as an analyst. And you were in the States. Did you ever think we'd have such an operation in Canada? And you are Canadian.
I am Canadian. Yeah. When we started down there in Boston, you really didn't know what to expect. My predecessor was in charge with building an investment team. That their mandate was to build products that would be distributed in Canada. We were primarily focused on Canadian securities. And after 10 years of kind of building up, I think, critical mass from both an assets perspective, a cultural way to do things perspective, the time was right to move the investment team to Toronto and Montreal.
And here we are.
Here we are.
And Ritu, you've come a long way from analyst to doing what you're doing now. Why don't you tell everybody about your responsibilities?
Sure. So my name is Ritu. I am the Director of Research for the Canadian Equity Research Team, as well as a portfolio manager. I've been at Fidelity for over 12 years. A number of those years I spent as an analyst, as many of my colleagues have as well, and rotating through the TSX, as Alex mentioned earlier. In 2021, I got involved in the crypto initiatives that we have, through the Fidelity Advantage Bitcoin and Ether ETFs. And thereafter, I moved into the Director of Research role, where my primary responsibilities are managing, mentoring, and growing the equity research team. And within the portfolio manager role, my responsibilities include the crypto products that I had mentioned earlier, as well as what we're here to speak about today, which is the Fidelity Canadian Long Short Alternative Fund.
When you became an analyst, what sector did you have to cover?
I started off with consumer staples, power and utilities. I then did energy, and then I finished off with real estate and insurance companies.
Cycling around a number before becoming a diversified portfolio manager.
Absolutely.
That's typically what happens.
Yep, that's exactly.
Andrew, being a private company, that's helped in the build out, hasn't it? Can you talk about some of the advantages of Fidelity being private? I know you could go on for hours, but just in your world.
Yeah, from my perspective, it's that we don't flinch around our long-term goals to make, you know, a 12-month adjustments for the P&L. We have had really unlimited resources, thinking back over my almost 26 years with the firm, whether that means from a dedication of recruiting the best people, providing the best IT resources, having a travel budget at our disposal to make sure that we're doing the proper due diligence about the companies that we're covering, or even, you know, indirectly second derivative type of research to allow us to make sure that we're triangulating to the right investment theses for all the, you know, all the securities that we're responsible for. So that's really the key hallmarks of being a private company, is that we continue along our goals, the resources are at our disposal to do the best job we possibly can for our clients.
And that's an interesting point about travel budget. There really isn't one, as far as nothing gets in the way of the analysts and portfolio managers doing what's right for the shareholders.
Yeah, we keep it really simple. If we believe something is worth, you know, worth traveling to or worth doing, getting an expert opinion on a very kind of niche-y matter, and we have to spend the dollars, if we think there's reason to do it and there's value add, we'll do it, you know, but we ask our employees at the same time to be responsible. If there's not value in it, then move on to somewhere else where we can spend the money where there is high value add.
So for any of you thinking that you should have been at dinner with Andrew last night because he has an unlimited budget, that's not the way it works. Ritu, before we get into the Canadian long short, let's just talk about the build out of the team as far as your responsibilities in hiring, the difficulty in someone getting a job at Fidelity. Take us through the process.
Yes, so we typically go through a roughly 3,000 resumes in any given year. Out of those 3,000, the individuals who are selected are asked to do a one-page stock pitch, which is turned around typically in 48 hours. And there'll be roughly 150 people that will do that. We then narrow it down to about 100 people, where my colleague Steve McMillan and I go through the first round interviews. Those people who are selected then go on and meet every single portfolio manager on the team. And if the person goes beyond that round, then they're asked to do a P-test. And so they're given 1 week to put together a stock pitch and a presentation in front of the entire investment team. And it's typically 1 hour long, and they're asked a lot of questions to ensure that they give us the insurance that they actually understand the stock and the drivers. And so in the past year, we've actually only had about 4 P-tests out of the 3,000 resumes, and we've hired 1 individual.
Wow. I will not apply. What are you laughing about? Now, let's get into the Canadian Long Short Fund. That launched this year, and it complements the other alternative strategies that we have. And this is exciting. You're part of it. Why don't you take us through that, and what sets it apart in this industry?
Yes, absolutely. So the Fidelity Canadian Long Short Alternative Fund is a 130-30 long short, and it's really about the power of our research. So it harnesses what I think are our competitive advantages, which are our people, our proven investment process, as well as the Fidelity scale. So it now allows us, this fund allows us to offer what we think is our most valuable asset, which is our research. And so fund holders can actually now own the breadth and the depth of our research capabilities. So we have gone back into time, and we've seen that irrespective of the time frame, our analyst team does an incredible job at picking securities that outperform the market, so our buy-rated names. But they actually do an even better job of identifying securities that underperform the market, so our sell-rated names. And they're able to do this with just remarkable accuracy and consistency. So this fund now allows us to go long on our buy-rated names and going short on our sell-rated names, so just really capturing a broader spectrum of our Fidelity research and the excess returns being generated from it. And then overlaying this research component, we have a rules-based approach that allows us to maximize our returns while managing risks such that we can deliver a core Canadian diversified fund that has very consistent risk and return metrics over time. So this fund really is just a core Canadian diversified fund. It offers directional exposure to that of the market while extracting the excess returns being generated from the broader spectrum of our Fidelity research. By going long on our buy-rated names, going short on our sell-rated names, and just really capturing the accuracy, consistency, and repeatability of our research.
And what this is doing as well is making what many people think is a small market, when you look at global capitalizations, a much bigger market, because we have both sides of the trade that we can take.
Absolutely.
That's exciting. Andrew, where does this all come from? Can you talk about the creation of solutions within the Canadian market, within your team?
Yes, so many of you may be aware, like, we put our portfolio managers and analysts through a lot of analytics when it comes to their performance, and as a means of both compensating those investment professionals, but also as a teaching tool and trying to discover areas where we think people can do better. So it's always about improving the process. And in roughly 2019, the head of investment risk and myself, in concert with our small quant team based in Toronto, we did a deeper dive into the quality of our research. Now, at a very high level, we're very aware of where our ratings rank relative to the market, the accuracy and the implied value added of those ratings. Our research analysts, not only in Canada, but across the Fidelity complex, are in charge of putting ratings on stocks which symbolize anything from strong buy to strong sell. A 1 through 5 quantitative rating. And at a high level, we know how these ratings are performing. And as I said, the implied value add of these ratings against the domestic benchmark. In Canada, that would be the TSX. But as always, you know, sometimes the devil's in the details. So our head of investment risk, myself, and our quant analysts went into depth to try to uncover added analytics and added kind of signals that we think might be constructive to, one, helping out the analysts, trying to find any systematic errors that we may be making across the research platform, or maybe it's germane and specific to any one sector, or maybe germane and specific to any one analyst. So it's really a fact-finding mission to gather more information, more knowledge, and improve the process. That's really where it started. And from that, we did a 14-year back test on the quality of our research in Canada, and one, we were even more pleased than we probably were before we started the exercise. And also in there, we found some things on a systematic basis that we could actually make better. One of the things that we discovered is, as Ritu mentioned, we're very good at identifying stocks you don't want to own, even better than stocks that we do want to own. But also germane in that, at some point in time, stocks that were not owned, had sell ratings, strong sell ratings, do become a buy, do get better for a number of reasons. And one of the kind of systematic errors, if you want to call it that, I'd probably prefer to call it opportunities, was we would raise that sell rating to a hold rating, effectively going from a 4 rating to a 3 rating. So the situation is getting better. What we uncovered is, in most of the situations, stocks don't go from 4s to holds. They don't go from sells to holds. They go to buys. And so there is an opportunity cost if we're not acting quickly in rating the stock a buy and then having portfolio managers across the complex attuned to that. And so those stocks become candidates for inclusion in their portfolio. So these were all teaching tools that we passed down to the analysts on our team, and it made for a great exercise. Also in that exercise, though, through uncovering the fact that we're really accurate when it comes to avoiding certain stocks, our head of investment risk and myself started kicking around the idea, could we back test these results if they were a portfolio, if they were a mutual fund, and use the sells or strong sells as shorting signals and lever up our buy opportunities? And what would that look like on a 13, 14 year back test? And as Ritu said, we would have some rules-based kind of criteria by which we would buy and sell stocks. We'd do it in a very systematic fashion. And on a paper basis, what would the results look like? And both John Wilson, who's our head of investment risk, and myself were like over the moon impressed with what the results came out to be. So when we had these results, and they were back-tested over a long stretch of time in different market environments with different analysts covering different sectors, the next place my head went to is we should build a commercially viable product off of this, a direct drive kind of product off of our research. And then we eventually seeded a mandate, named Ritu as a portfolio manager on it, with her being the director of research, and here we are today.
And as you can see on the chart on the wall, or on the screen, it's a scissor chart, use your imagination, but Andrew, for a long time, we could only really capitalize on one part of that. We weren't shorting. What was the catalyst of change to get us to be able to do shorting within the Fidelity complex?
Well, I think we had some good success with the launch of our three, you know, alternative products that we are adept at. We've shown through Dan DuPont, David Way, Brett DeLay, we're our adept to shorting. We had fostered the prime brokerage relationships with the trading desk on our team. Our analysts think that way. So I think, you know, what the scissors chart shows you is we're leaving some excess return opportunities or alpha opportunities on the table through just this research alone dating back to 2006. If we're not taking advantage of our sell stocks to a greater degree. So for example, if we had a sell rating on a stock that was 200 basis points in the TSX from a weighting perspective, and you know, that stock goes down 50%, well, the avoidance is 100 basis point, you know, active return to the portfolio. But what if we could actually short that? And then we'd further capitalize on that and then take that capital and put it to a long idea where maybe the upside in that idea is 20%. So now you've increased the opportunity set of a portfolio by being able to exploit more of our research than you could do in a conventional long-only portfolio. And therefore, what you're, in theory, trying to do is actually raise the risk-adjusted return of a mandate. And so what you're basically getting is more incremental return for less incremental risk relative to a long-only portfolio. In theory, we have to do it in practice and whatnot, but that's what the math would tell you.
Great. And Ritu, let's get into further insights on the investment objectives of the Canadian long-short portfolio.
Sure. So as Andrew and I have been speaking, the idea behind this fund is to really capitalize on the broader research platform. And so, and then just the excess returns being generated from it. So there are a few things to keep in mind with that respect. So first, this is a 100% Canadian fund. And so it's a fund that just really just stays in its lane. Secondly, we have roughly equal weighted positions, both on the long side as well as the short side, while maintaining directional exposure to the market. We have a very diversified fund here because of the fact that we have, to our knowledge, the largest investment team or the largest research team in Canada, and we have the ability to just turn over more rocks. We have quite a few securities under coverage, and we try to represent those securities in this fund. So we have anywhere between 120 to 190 positions at any given time, and within that, roughly 40 to 80 positions will be on the short side. We try to maintain net exposure of roughly 100% within the 130-30. And so while market drift will allow that to deviate a little bit, we're laser focused on ensuring that we bring the securities back to target. And I would say just because of what I mentioned, that we're trying to represent an opinion about every single security that we cover through this fund. This would be just a diversified all ideas fund rather than just a concentrated best ideas fund.
So give us some, an illustrative example of the competitive advantage.
Yes, so I talked about earlier what I think our competitive advantages are, which are our people, mm-hmm. our proven investment process, as well as the Fidelity scale. So I'll unpack that a little bit.
Sure.
So from a people standpoint, I think that we have the best investment team, the best research team in Canada. We have 9 very high-powered individuals that have all gone through that recruiting process that we talked about earlier that just really go above and beyond for our fund holders, just day in and day out. I'm sure many of you have met them or seen them on Fidelity Connects, but these individuals are just really always looking for, they have this persistent search for alpha, just really just ingrained in them. And so you put together just this intellectual integrity, the fidelity, winning culture that we have with this learning mindset, and you get this group of individuals. Mm-hmm. So this group of individuals are then moving on to our second competitive advantages, which is our investment process. And day in and day out, they're looking at the securities under coverage, and they're analyzing industry fundamentals, company fundamentals, stock drivers. They're dissecting financials. They're forecasting corporate profitability and earnings. They're looking at capital allocation. They're looking at valuation, upside, downside. And they're doing this all using the third competitive advantage, which is our fidelity scale. So this may require them to meet with management, whether it's the C-suite or middle management. This might require them to talk to industry experts. So whether there's buyers or suppliers or customers, go do on-site visits, whether it's a mine in Africa or an oil field in the Permian. And they take all this information, they try to synthesize it, come back to the team, talk to prior analysts and portfolio managers that may have covered their sector, talk to potentially their counterpart on the credit side or the US equity research side. And they synthesize this information and they simplify it into four bullets, which is their thesis. And they do this for every single security that they have under coverage, and every single security that's in this fund goes through that process. And so these three competitive advantages just really go hand in hand, and it's effectively, the analysts are just putting this mosaic together day in and day out.
Can you give us some examples of the type of opportunities you'd be looking for from a long and a short standpoint?
Yes, absolutely. So I think we have a slide on this. Back in 2022, our industrials analyst, Bobby Reynolds, who I'm sure you all have seen on Fidelity Connects, he's been with the firm for about 7 years, very core member of the team. He took a look at AtkinsRéalis, which is formerly known as SNC-Lavalin. And so many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with the security, but for those of you who are not, SNC has been, for the better part of a decade, has just been plagued with scandals. So whether it's bribery scandals, anti-money laundering, fraud, and so it has derated materially over time. And so it's been a stock that has just not been in favor for the better part of a decade. So in the fall of 2022, it had gone through a period where it had a part of its business, which is a construction business, that was bleeding cash. And it had a UK business that wasn't doing very well either. And it just kept derating. And so Bobby took a look at this business and he flipped the thesis on his head. And he took a look at it from a different lens. He saw a company that had low expectations in the market. So the management was guiding to mid-single digit organic growth. And this is for an engineering and design company, which was at that time benefiting from the stimulus tailwinds, the fiscal tailwinds that we've been talking about over the last 2 days. So he saw a potential upside to that. That's 70% of the business. There's another 20% of the business that that's a nuclear business, and they're involved in just project management on the nuclear side. So he saw that, you know, there's potential tightening and potential for more reactors to be built in the medium term. So he wasn't sure about that, but he was like, that's optionality. Sure, the balance sheet was levered at 3x, but there's optionality with asset sales. And the stock was trading at 7x earnings relative to its peers, which was in the high teens. And so he upgraded it to a buy, and he saw that, you know, there was also another business that was bleeding cash and that that was winding down. And so what he saw was that if we were paid to wait at that valuation. And so he upgraded it, and it benefited this fund, and it benefited many other funds on the platform. And it was a big contributor. So it added 42 basis points of alpha through the middle of last year. On the short side, we have an example on the short side as well. This is covered by Brendan, who, for those of you who are tuning in virtually, I'm a familiar face to you all. He is our communication services analyst, and back in the spring of 2022, he was taking a look at the industry, and he started becoming less favorable on it. So what he saw was increased competitive increased competitive landscape, just given that there was big M&A in the space, and there was a potential for a fourth player to come into the wireless segment, which would have created competition. He saw increased regulatory burden, and he saw rates were increasing. So rates are a headwind to interest rate sensitive businesses. And so while the fundamentals were going south, this telco, which remains nameless, was actually re-rating up. And the reason for that is, if you remember at that time, the conflict emerged with Ukraine and Russia. So there was a flight to safety. So he went and he talked to our team, he talked to prior telco analysts, he talked to other portfolio managers, and went through our notes system, which we have decades of notes in our system, and he realized this is just as good as it gets. So he downgraded the stock, which was a good move, and it was very alpha generating for the fund on the short side of the book. And so in 2022, when it was a risk-off market, we were downgrading this telco and we were upgrading SNC, which is very counterintuitive to what you would think, but it comes back to just the power of our research platform.
So thank you for that. Thanks to Wall Street via Hollywood, people also get a little nervous around the word short. So can you talk about how we control risk?
Yes. So. We short the securities that are sell rated within our platform. And so Andrew talked about this a little bit earlier, but a security can be short for a number of reasons. There could be earnings downside, there could be a change in the fundamentals, there could be a disconnect with what the market is valuing the stock at versus what we think internally. And so if we choose to short a security, there's a lot in the way of risk controls. And so I had mentioned that it's a very diversified fund. And so on the short side of the fund, which is that 30 of the overall gross exposure of 160, we have anywhere between 40 and 80 positions. And so as a result, it's very, very diversified. We have quite a few parameters that we have in place. So for example, if the size of our short position gets too large, we quickly pare it back. If the cost of borrow, which is indicative of the short interest in the stock, goes up too high, then we close the position. And so we're constantly monitoring this. And so we have weekly risk reports that are given to us, where we're constantly ensuring that the risk is what it should be. We have quarterly risk reviews, which is this 75-page document that we sit through with Andrew Marchese, as well as John Wilson, who we mentioned earlier. And so we're just constantly ensuring that the short side, particularly the short side of the book, is doing what it's supposed to do.
And that leads to a risk rating of what, Andrew, for this portfolio?
I think, you know, it depends on how you want to manage, measure risk, but the implicitly, what we're hoping for is a volatility or tracking error basis that is somewhat similar to the Canadian Discipline Equity Fund. Mm. But from a risk parameter perspective, if you were to decompose the TSX into a bunch of borrower risk factors like yield and momentum and size and style, it should have a risk profile that over a long stretch of time is not statistically different, significantly different from the TSX.
Which leads to a prospectus risk rating, I believe, of medium?
Yes.
Yeah, and it also implies that you're getting the excess return from stock selection, which is, you know, as you've heard over the last 2 days, this is where Fidelity, you know, is basically dedicating all its resources is to that bottom-up stock selection. So in essence, with this portfolio, we're putting our money where our mouth is, and we're just capitalizing on the intellectual property that is in our sell ratings, mm-hmm. and being able to lever up and exploit those opportunities of our buys even more. So you should be, in theory, spreading out your alpha opportunity, which I think from these results, you can see that we're doing that pretty well.
Well, let's go to those results. We'll put them up on the screen. And this is what all the things we've just talked about. Ritu, walk us through that.
Sure. So as Andrew talked about earlier, the intention of this product was to capitalize on our accuracy, our consistency, as well as our ability to pick short securities very well.
So let's talk about what this costs. Is there a lot? Well, there is a lot behind this. What has that resulted in from a cost perspective?
You mean for the fund holders themselves?
Yeah.
No difference than our long-only mandates. So, yeah.
It's available in any ETF as well. Yeah. Why, Ritu?
Just for, you know, if advisors find it easier to invest in an ETF, it's optionality.
So why not? And U.S. dollars.
Yes.
I believe.
Yes. I think so, yeah.
That's right. Andrew,
why a big focus on Canada versus U.S. or global?
Well, we started there because we have a long tenured research staff where we were controlling the research output, you know, in Boston, then Toronto, right? And so we felt like we have, through our research efforts, and Ritu touched on this a little bit, we're covering the entire investable area of Canada. So you have a deep, broad understanding of your skill set in a single region or country in this case. And so we felt, you know, that's a good starting point to conduct this kind of study. And so we had a lot of information that was stored in our databases, you know, when we undertook the project, about 13 years worth of back testing with different market cycles. So we felt very good about that. So because the rigor of the research and the study was so high, naturally it says, well, we can maybe build a Canadian equity product. So I think then it begets the question, is there something specific about Canada? Are there pros, are there cons to doing this type of mandate in Canada? You heard it a little bit this morning. David Tulk touched on it. You know, Canada, really, the TSX, the market, is really an export-based market. You know, the majority of stocks actually are more correlated to global growth than they are what's going on in the domestic economy. If you think about the domestic economy in Canada, dovetail that with the TSX, you're really talking about the banks, telecom service providers, the staples, and maybe a couple of consumer discretionary stocks. Otherwise, it's really a leverage on global growth. So I think when people think about the product being Canadian equities, and you kind of, your mindset may automatically come to what's going on in Canada. You've heard we're kind of negative on the Canadian dollar. Multiple managers have said that over the last 2 days, particularly relative to the USD. Maybe the prospects for the Canadian economy aren't as buoyant as the rest of the world, predominantly the US. But that is different. That economic argument is different than the market discussion. So we want to kind of focus on the market discussion and the TSX and the opportunity set. As I said, through 14 years of back testing these results, and what that means from an alpha or excess return potential for clients.
Great, thank you. Do remember to send in any questions if you have any for Ritu or Andrew before we wrap. Ritu, let's talk about the kind of broad thematic positioning right now.
Yes, so as I mentioned, this is a fund that just really capitalizes on our security selection. So what we try to do is we try to have directional alignment to the market. And so from a super sector standpoint, we look very similar to the market. But where the alpha is being generated is within the super sector. So the super sectors being interest rate sensitives, the resources, industrials, as well as consumer. Mm-hmm. So I'll unpack that a little bit. So starting off with the interest rate sensitives. We've seen quite a bit in the way of, actually the interest rate sensitive did quite well towards the end of last year after the infamous Fed pivot. But since the expectation of cuts have been coming out of the market, we've seen that kind of pare back a little bit. And so the biggest headwinds that we've seen within interest rate sensitives are the telcos as well as utility companies. And so within the interest rate sensitives, actually we're favorable on the utility companies at this point. And of course there's quite a bit in the way of stock selection that's happening within the utilities, but you know, these are mid-single digit businesses, optionality with what we've talked about from, you know, data centers and AI standpoint that, you know, we've discussed over the last couple of days. as you know, we'll need more power generation as well as transmission. Mm-hmm. You know, we're very laser focused on capital allocation, so ensuring you know the dividends are safe, ensuring they are levered businesses. So we're very focused on the capital structure. But with the utilities, the debt costs are actually passed through. And valuations are more attractive on an absolute as well as relative basis than what we've seen in decades now. And so, you know, with stock selection in mind, utilities are an area that we're favorable on within the interest rate sensitives. Moving on to resources, Hugo made a really good comment on, he talked about commodities yesterday. And so within the resources, we like some of the names that he, some of the areas that he mentioned yesterday, so copper, uranium, gold, and also as well as lumber. And so we're looking for commodities that either have, you know, a supply catalyst, a demand catalyst, or a valuation catalyst. And we're really focused from an earnings standpoint as to what does the trough look like, what does the peak look like, and where are we? Where are we in that spectrum? And so. So some of the commodities I mentioned, I won't regurgitate the thesis because we've heard it quite a few times. And then from a consumer and industrial standpoint, those super sectors are very, it's basically a stock picker's paradise where you can actually play on some of the themes that we've discussed. So
Canada has a stock picker's paradise.
Yeah.
We don't hear that often. That's good to hear.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, if you like stock picking, like consumer, industrials, technology, these are all great areas to play in. And so some of the themes that you can reflect within those super sectors are stuff such as, you know, the themes that we had talked about, like reshoring, restocking, decarbonization. And even, you know, just AI data centers. And so that's where those themes kind of emerge within those super sectors.
Excellent. Great overview. Andrew, maybe very quickly set the scene for Brett, Dan, and Dave's products relative to what Ritu is running now.
Sure. So I think, you know, the question is, how is this product different from our other alternative products? If you look at Dan DuPont's product, it is very much a style bias type of portfolio. So it sits in the deeply in the value camp. It looks globally at securities. So stylistically, it's very different from this. And from a regional perspective, it's very different than this. It will have a very different risk profile than this product. Brett DeLay's market neutral product is 100% long, 100% short. It theoretically has no market exposure. Right, so it's a beta of zero, and it's garnering all its excess return from a series of pair trades. The product might be closely, or most closely resembling Dave Way's, but and again, a lot of ways it's also different. Dave's product is 130-30, as he talked about yesterday, kind of nets out to that. More North American centric. It's core in style, somewhat like this, but it has a slightly different risk profile as well along a number of metrics. I jokingly said to John Wilson once when we were doing this and we got the results and we were, you know, kind of toying with the idea of incubating a product about this. I said, if you look at the risk profile and the implied alpha that we back tested over 14 years, it looks like Canadian Discipline Equity Fund on steroids. And that's kind of what it looks like. The risk profile was very similar. We just expanded the alpha opportunity set. So I think that's how you should think of the four products. And if you're one of our clients who think about including it in your overall multi-asset portfolio, I think you always have to make a consideration about what is the excess return or alpha opportunity set, but also what you're trying to accomplish from a risk perspective as well.
And then Ritu, there's what you said earlier, which is this is also pure Canada.
Yes, absolutely. It's pure Canada.
You're not stepping outside of our borders at all.
100% Canada.
Specific guardrails that you can speak to?
Yes. So there's actually quite a few in the way of guardrails. So Canada only. It's a 130-30 long short, so with the focus on having that net exposures being 100%. We are focused on maintaining our super sector weights. And so we have some parameters that we're willing to let the fund get to from a super sector standpoint in terms of its weights, but it's quite often rebalanced. We have size constraints, we have liquidity constraints, and so we're just, and then of course, as I mentioned earlier, we are just laser focused on the short side of the fund. And so we're constantly rebalancing this fund to ensure that we stay within our guardrails.
Last word, where does this fit in somebody's portfolio?
So I think this fund is, again, I think it, while it's an alternative fund, I really would consider this a core Canadian diversified fund. And so again, this fund is one where we're really just trying to extract that excess returns that we're talking about, and we're really trying to extract that from the broader spectrum of our Fidelity research by going long on our buys, going short on our sells, and really capturing that accuracy, consistency, and repeatability of our research.
Ritu, Andrew, thank you so much for being up here, speaking to everybody. Sounds like an exciting new solution, and I'm glad you're running it. This is great.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. Fidelity Mutual Funds and ETFs are available by working with a financial advisor or through an online brokerage account. Visit fidelity.ca/howtobuy for more information. While visiting fidelity.ca, you can also find information on future live webcasts. And don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thanks again. See you next time. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada, ULC, or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.